to another episode of Strictly Business, the podcast where we talk with some of the brightest minds working in the media business today. I'm Andrew Wallenstein with Variety. The talk of Wall Street in recent years has been the rise of SPACs, otherwise known as special purpose acquisition companies, as an alternative to the traditional IPO. Well, there's no one better than today's guest to talk SPACs. Harry Sloan has launched and completed more of them than anyone else, and one of them, DraftKings, may be the most successful one of the hundreds out there, having delivered 450% return on investment. But SPACs are a tricky business, to say the least, particularly in the media and entertainment industries, where Harry certainly knows a thing or two, having enjoyed a long career in Hollywood as the CEO of MGM. So you better believe he's also got some thoughts on that pending Amazon acquisition. We'll be right back with Harry Sloan.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
Welcome back to the Strictly Business podcast, where my guest is Harry Sloan. He's gone on from a successful Hollywood career to a second chapter as a SPAC deal specialist, both in and outside of the media business. I interviewed him on November 4th at the annual Techtainment Conference at Loyola Law School. I want you to give your sense of what the SPAC marketplace is right now as we talk in early November, because when you look at the data, it looks at while 2021 undoubtedly saw an explosion in these deals, that burst was really contained to the first quarter. You could see the numbers have come down, although October seems to be yielding fresh activity. So walk us through what you're seeing.
What's the status of the SPAC market, Andrew? When we did DraftKings, we closed it in March of last year, in the middle of COVID, March of 20. There were about 40 SPACs. Today there's 600. I think one thing has a lot to do with the other. I think success of DraftKings was the first big, very noticed, successful SPAC with a name brand. And I think that did trigger it. The 600 SPACs are looking for deals. Most of them won't find a deal. Or many of them won't find a deal. If they don't find a deal in 2 years, whatever amount of money they raised, in the case of the DraftKings SPAC, we had $400 million. The case of our last SPAC, which bought Ginkgo Bioworks, $1.7 billion, it all has to be returned to the investors. So the SPAC sponsor has 2 years. Now, sometimes the deals are done in 18 months, 18 months, 2 years. Find a company to acquire, file the appropriate presentations and disclosures at the SEC, have it approved, have the deal closed, all in 2 years, your money goes back. What do I think is going to happen with 600 SPACs out there? A lot of them are not going to end well, including the one that I think we were just talking about, which is the one acquiring the Trump agreement to launch social media or whatever they're actually trying to do.
Well, we'll get to Trump in a second. What I'm curious, though, is also it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's been some regulatory scrutiny with the SEC starting to pay more attention, people on the Hill paying more attention. Has that not had a chilling effect here as we look at the numbers and see that that big spike that in deals from March seems to have petered out in subsequent months?
Well, the reason they petered out has nothing to do with the potential regulations. Potential regulations started kicking in when the Biden administration took over. And also, as you alluded to, there's some work in the Senate. But what you were showing on that chart, which is that there's so many fewer SPACs right now being launched, was because there was way too much speculation going on in the SPAC world. In other words, in order to have 50 or 100 SPACs a month, 300 I saw in 1 month, you have to have buyers, you have to have money to invest. And the banks were lending incredible amount of money to hedge funds. The hedge funds were investing it in SPACs. SPACs were all doing well, so they kept wanting to do that. It looked like easy money, but the more SPACs there were, the more SPACs needed to find a deal. And when they actually find a deal, at that point, the investors in the SPAC have the option of leaving their money in or taking it out. If they decide to leave it in, they actually have to come up with true capital as opposed to bank debt. Anyway, there was crazy speculation going on. There was other kinds of speculation, which came from the market being so overheated. That's why there's less SPACs. Also, you know, if you try to go after a company to acquire it and take it public in a SPAC, and you've got 10 other SPACs competing, you start seeing how tough the company. Anyway, so it was the marketplace that has caused the SPAC speculation and the overheated market to slow down. The regulatory side is another issue, and there's a bunch of lawyers here, and congratulations, you're all going to great law school. From a lawyer point of view, the regulation, I think, becomes interesting. What's going on the regulatory side is new SEC chairman, new SEC is appointed after Biden's elected, comes in at a time when there's a lot of concerns over SPACs, the speculation I just talked about, too much easy money flowing around. If you remember in January and February, there was a lot of talk in the government about these retail trading brokers, Robinhood, and all those stocks like GameStop and AMC that were trading at crazy multiples because there was some exercise in democracy or some excuse for people to spend stimulus checks or for whatever reason, craziness around retail trading, retail investors started buying SPACs. That was all going on. And the SEC said, wait a minute, we need to look at all of that. My view is that the SEC has announced several things that they want to look at with regard to SPACs, none of which are the major issues they should be looking at. The SEC has said publicly, beware of SPACs that have famous people. You know, there's a SPAC that the Shaq is involved in. There's a SPAC that A-Rod is involved in. There's a SPAC that, you know, beware of that. Well, I mean, what does that mean? The SEC has said, we want to look at some very complicated warrant accounting. Well, I mean, warrant accounting is very technical. All the lawyers and accountants are looking at it are thinking, okay, this is just paperwork. The real concern about SPACs is the trading that goes on in the SPAC shares itself based on rumors and, you know, uninformative announcements of deals that may or may not happen. And I couldn't have asked for a better example of what the SEC and all the SEC lawyers need to think about, which has been demonstrated by this so-called Trump SPAC. All we've seen is a very general PowerPoint. There's almost nothing in there about that SPAC and what Trump's track record is and the other businesses and what's really in there. There's a promise that this SPAC is going to be able to launch social media with Trump. What does that mean? There's no detail whatsoever. Yet that stock, as a SPAC, was trading at $10, traded as high as $170. It's still $58 a share, which is 6x on where the SPAC was trading when it was announced. 300 million shares traded the first day. Probably been 500 million shares traded since this announcement, or whatever it was, a leak. $20 or $30 billion has been invested in this stock at somewhere between $50 and $100 a share. Now, if it doesn't work out, and there's a lot of reasons that it might not work out, not all of them do, the stock goes back to 10, and people lose that $20, $30, $40 billion. And I'm going to guess, whether it's Trump supporters or whether it's just kids who are trading on these retail platforms, it's not a group of people who would be in any position to lose that kind of money. It's not Fidelity, Wellington, Franklin Fund, Capital Group. It's not these trillion-dollar mutual funds. It's a lot of individuals, patriotic Americans who think they're doing something good for either Trump or the Republicans. It's going to be a shit show if it falls apart. And that's the kind of thing the SEC should be looking at, not what they've announced so far. As far as Congress, we can get to that later if you want.
Sure. Well, I guess what I'm wondering, though, is given this frothy marketplace that you're describing, how does that impact your strategy, your approach? You've just completed a seventh deal, but is, you know, do you need to sort of sit back and wait till things calm down before you try an eighth or a ninth?
I definitely want to pay attention to the regulatory environment. I think all we have now out of the SEC are some leaks about things they're looking at. There isn't anything they're looking at that would deter me or would defer those of you out there that are thinking about being involved in SPACs from wanting to do them. There's nothing going on other than they're looking into it in the Senate. I don't smell that there's going to be regulations that make Trump, that makes SPACs impossible. So no, I mean, I think we'll be okay. I don't anticipate anything coming out of the regulatory side. I do anticipate a lot more sanity and less speculation among SPAC investors, and therefore much less SPACs. Will there be 600 a year from now? No. Will it be 200, 150? There'll be a lot less. It'll be way less important than it is now.
So let's go to the Congress side of this equation. Elizabeth Warren's been particularly out front. Certainly this is, I feel like it's just the beginning in terms of the kind of scrutiny that's going to come from Capitol Hill. What do you think?
It's too early to tell. It's really more in the purview of the SEC to make sure that investors understand what they're getting involved in, which is the disclosure, which is like all the various documents, whether it's the S-1, which is an IPO document, or an S-4, which is a merger. Both are involved in a SPAC. For those of you that are, you know, looking at the technical side of this, SPAC begins with a regular way IPO, an S-1, and when it makes a deal to acquire a company, it files an S-4, which is a simple merger that has to be voted on by the shareholders. It's within those documents that the SEC has plenty of opportunity to make changes, but I don't anticipate changes that are going to hurt, that are going to hurt legitimate, honest SPAC sponsors. As far as the Congress is concerned, there's no reason right now to believe that there's any particular legislative action. Also, there's so much going on in other areas, you know, whether it's the Build Back America or whether it's the infrastructure bill. I mean, the priorities in the Congress right now don't seem to be looking at regulating SPACs or really much Wall Street regulation.
Got it. It's interesting looking at your track record in the SPAC market because so many different kinds of companies. You started out with, you know, delivering Wi-Fi to airlines, the Indian satellite business, media plays, not surprising coming from you, but then you kind of went in some very interesting directions with sports betting, synthetic biology. What is it, you know, what is it in terms of what you look for in a company that makes it a good SPAC target?
Good question. Yeah, during the SPAC hysteria, and I think maybe it's still the case today, there is a view among many people that companies are better off going public through the SPAC process, again, by merging into a SPAC, as opposed to regular way IPO. You know, I don't feel that way. I think most deals are still better off going regular way IPO, if for no other reason that the SPAC sponsors, we add friction. We take, you know, a nice, healthy piece of the company for doing it. And if we're not adding credible value, it doesn't make sense to do that. There are at least two categories that I would say that make more sense for a SPAC. Let's talk about DraftKings to start with. DraftKings could not go public regular way, and it needed money. DraftKings could not go public regular way because on its own, because its story would have been raise more money, use it for marketing. FanDuel and DraftKings were beating their brains out publicly. There was a view out there that just giving them more money is going to spend on marketing. They needed a different story. The story that made sense for them was a transformative acquisition to buy a company called SB Tech, which was their tech supplier. So they would be able to say to the market, we're not going to compete on how much money we spend in advertising and marketing, and how many commercials you guys all see right now on the World Series or on football. We're going to compete because we're going to have the best products. We're going to have the best technology. We're going to have in-game betting, for example, where, you know, if I'm thinking of Aaron Rodgers right now because of COVID, but if Aaron Rodgers, you know, has a ball in the 2-minute drill, you can bet right during the game on whether or not he's going to score a touchdown or a field goal. You can bet whether a kick is going to be successful. So products that would be good, that's how they were going to compete. Anyway, in order to do that, they had to acquire SB Tech. So what they were doing was two companies were going public at the same time. You can't do that as a regular way IPO. You have to have consolidated financials. You have to show operating history. You have to show the synergies. It would have taken a year. The only way to take two companies public at the same time, in this case, DraftKings and SB Tech, is through a SPAC. How? Basically, the SPAC just buys both companies. So a three-way merger, two companies who want to get together, that makes sense in a SPAC. The other one is what we did with Ginkgo Synthetic Biology, and it's what we call a category of one company. So most companies are not category of one. Most companies have several other businesses who compete with them. Whatever the industry is, whether it's automobiles, whether it's hotels, whatever it is, there are many what you call comps, comparables. So if you take a company public, you can value it based on its performance against someone else. However, if you have a company, and this comes often out of the tech world, which is we call category of one, there is no one else doing what they're doing. There's no way to value them versus other companies in the market, right? If we were taking Variety public, Andrew, we could value it against Hollywood Reporter, we could value it against other publishing companies, we could value it against New York Times, Washington Post, all these public companies. Synthetic Biology, the only company of scale out there is Ginkgo Bioworks. So if you take it public regular way, the way a regular way IPO goes is the company goes on a roadshow, it meets with investors, it sits down with Capital Group or Fidelity or Wellington, it spends 45 minutes going through its business and its valuation. And Thursday at 4:00, everybody has to show their cards. They have to put in order how much stock do you want. A SPAC doesn't work that way. The process of selling to investors a SPAC merger is much more involved. You go to the investors, there's no time limit, there's no 45-minute meeting. You can have as long a meeting as you want. You can have a follow-up meeting. You can have a phone call with the CFO. DraftKings, perfect example of this. When we took DraftKings public 2 years ago, there was only sports betting allowed in one state, New Jersey. But the Supreme Court had invalidated a federal law which had prohibited sports betting and said no, state by state can allow sports betting. So each state had to go through some kind of regulatory process. How long would that take? California, New York, Florida, Texas, the four biggest states, 2 years later, still don't have sports betting. We may never have sports betting in California. It depends on whether you think the influence of the tribes who control betting in casinos are going to be able to prevent it. Florida, it's the Seminole Indians. I mean, you don't know. Texas, it's the churches who are opposing it. So how does an investor decide 2 years ago, when only one state had sports betting, what was the value of a sports betting? How big is the business going to be? We call the TAM, total addressable market. How big a share is DraftKings? So you needed someone, in our case, to put together a projection. Okay, within 1 year, 6 states. Here's the ones we think. Within 2 years, 12 states. Here's what the business looks like at maturity. You can't do that in a regular way IPO. You can't make 5-year projections. You can't make 1-year projections because you take on liability. So in a SPAC, you can provide much more information. You can give long-term projections. The investors don't have to believe them. they can say, you know what, let's have the CFO come in and see us. We think he's full of shit. We're not going to buy the stock. But you're able to go through a long process. And so for a company that's a category of one, whether it's a DraftKings or whether it's a Ginkgo in synthetic biology or Skills, the company that's in skill gaming, which is video games like esports, but casual esports, where you can play against other people for money. Those are companies, there's no other company like them. There's no comps. They make sense to do as a SPAC.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Harry Sloan.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
Ooh. That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yemi's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that.
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to The Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus's real hip-hop and R&B.
And we're back with Harry Sloan, who's talking about SPAC deals he's done out of his Eagle Equity Partners outfit. Talking about the media business, you know, you are far from alone in terms of people in the media world being active in the SPAC space. We're seeing all sorts of activity from people like Todd Boehly, Joe Iannello from CBS, Greg Maffei from Liberty. What do you think it is about the media and entertainment space that makes it sort of SPAC friendly?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of them. Kevin Mayer and Tom Staggs.
Oh, yeah, those are the best examples. Yeah.
I think they've done two SPACs. Todd just announced he's doing, I think, Vivid Seats, which I think DraftKings may have invested in. Look, I think SPACs are covering every aspect, every industry. I mean, there's 100 biotech SPACs. A year ago, there were no biotech SPACs. SPACs have become the flavor of the month for biotech. They haven't really become the flavor yet for entertainment. There have been a few deals. Sagansky, my partner, Jeff Sagansky, my great partner for many years, he has a background in entertainment. He ran CBS. He ran Sony Pictures. 11 years ago, when he and I launched our first SPAC, we were the first ones that specifically said that we're targeting companies in the media. We're all generalists. They're financial people. But we had both come out of the entertainment industry. It's funny that I was in my late 50s. He was in maybe his mid 50s. I'd been running MGM at the time. He had been running something else. And we had said to investors, we said, look, we'll find a company, but we both run public companies. If something goes wrong, we could step in and run the company. And that was a terrible, terrible marketing approach, because the companies we would then want to acquire be worried. You know, would the founders and the CEOs lose their job because Jeff or I were trying to do it just to get a job for ourselves? So we got quickly off of that and never, even talked about it, nor have we jumped into any companies, into the management. But we targeted media and entertainment. And what we said then, this is 2011, we had said that traditional media entertainment, television, movies, cable television, satellite, all of that stuff, there was no great growth. The only growth in those days was going to be digital. It was 1.0 or 2.0, I don't know what it was. So we said to the investors when we raised that SPAC, we said, what kind of deal are you looking for? I said, well, if it's in the US, there's nothing in traditional media that you could IPO, meaning that would have this kind of growth. So if we did something in the US, we would do something in what was then called new media, okay, digital media. However, if we're going to do traditional media, we'll do it outside the U.S. in some high growth market that hasn't been, overbuilt already. So we go to an emerging territory like an India or an Indonesia. And in those cases, you could do satellite or cable. And ironically, it worked out that way. The first SPAC we did was a company called Global Eagle Entertainment, which provided Wi-Fi connections for airlines and content. So we bought the biggest company that controlled content supply to airlines, had all the airlines in contract, and a company that had the technology to provide Wi-Fi via satellite. So now you take Wi-Fi by granted, you know, granted on airlines, and you get all your movies that way. But 10 years ago, it was a very beginning business. So our first SPAC, as we said, if we do something domestically, this was mainly domestic, we would do something in new media. You couldn't get any more new media in 2011 than Wi-Fi to the airlines. It's still very well established. And technically, if you're trying to sign on when you're on a flight. And the second SPAC deal we did, actually, we took a satellite TV company, traditional media, public, but in India, an emerging territory. So this traditional media, it's got to be a high growth, emerging territory. It's in the U.S. It had to be new media.
So it doesn't sound as if you think, say, you know, SPACs could have a unique role in reshaping a media and entertainment business that seems to be going through some pretty big changes right now.
And, you know, I think our next SPAC, if we do one, might look along those lines. I do think the cards are going to be reshuffled. I think there's going to be some orphan companies that come out of these big mergers as they continue to go on. You know, an example would be one of the great IPOs of this year was Warner Media. Warner Music, which during the Time Warner merger was an orphaned asset. They didn't think much of, you know, the music industry in those days. And Len Blavatnik bought it for like $3 billion. And they took it public this year for $30 billion. You'd find something like that, an asset that out of one of these mergers that doesn't necessarily belong. Or you get a company like AT&T, Time Warner, where they're divesting themselves. You know, they sold Warner Media, for example, to Discovery. There may be some opportunities. Those are also very, very big deals, and you would need a very, very big SPAC. And there aren't any right now. The biggest one was the one we had. Soaring Eagle was $1.7 billion. It did a $15 billion deal, as I may have mentioned earlier. The biggest one out there now is maybe $1 billion. They could do a $5 to $10 billion deal. Those big media deals could be bigger than that. So possible, particularly if it's our SPAC, which could probably raise a big enough fund to be able to do a bigger deal.
It sounds like what you're describing with these potential orphans and the opportunities there, SPACs sort of step into the mold that private equity has been in previous years. They've been sort of the white knights that have rescued some distressed companies.
Yeah, TBG came in and picked up DirecTV, right? You're absolutely right. SPAC is somewhere between late stage private investment and IPO. So one thing that public investors don't like is these private companies, especially in the tech world. We saw this with AppLovin. We saw it with Roblox recently. The last private round would be done, in the case of Roblox, was like a $4 billion valuation. By the time they did their IPO, it was 40. So in 1 year, the public investors had to pay $40 billion, whereas the private investors were investing at four. And the public investors are saying, well, we need to get in sooner. SPAC actually is a way to take those companies public sooner. In the case of private equity, you're absolutely right. SPAC is an alternative. So if a company is looking to spin off an asset like Warner Music did in those days, or DirecTV was spinning off, or AT&T was spinning off DirecTV, they look at private equity, they look at selling it to TBG as they did in this case, but they also look at SPACs.
I'm also curious what you think of the fate that has befallen MGM, which of course you used to run, and now Amazon could be scooping up. Did you ever foresee that kind of acquisition?
When I was running MGM, I didn't see the tech companies, but they weren't in streaming because I only ran MGM through 2010. There was a period of time, though, I'm guessing it was about 5 or 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when the tech companies came through Hollywood and they really did kick the tires on MGM. They kicked the tires on Lionsgate. They kicked the tires on Sony Pictures. A lot of the sort of standalone production and library companies. Apple was in town, Amazon was in town, Google was in town, Microsoft. I remember they all came through, and for whatever reason, there were no deals. And I think what's happened is the more of these big platforms for streaming, so now you've got Apple and you've got Disney Plus, and you've got Netflix, and you've got Amazon Prime, and you've got Paramount Plus, and you've got Stars, and that there's a shortage of content. And if you don't have a historical library like Disney had, and even they didn't have enough, that's why they acquired Fox, you do need to look at the MGMs and the Lionsgates and the Sonys, because there's just not enough. There's not enough library. There's not enough bulk to. There's not enough deep library to fill these streaming platforms. So no, I didn't anticipate it when I was at MGM. It was too early. I didn't see it take place when they kicked the tires 5 or 6 years ago and said no thanks. And I do see it being the trend now. I mean, my opinion, the best TV library out there by far is CBS. And I don't know why Apple doesn't just buy that. I mean, or Google, if they decided to go back in streaming business, which they may not, or Amazon. So I would think that. I would think Sony, I would think Lionsgate. All are good ideas for them to acquire. I think in 2 years, you'll see one of those deals get done. Maybe all of them with a tech company. Now, if Amazon gets turned down, I mean, there's a possibility. What happens with these mergers is, those of you that are antitrust students, they're either assigned to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, or the DOJ, the Department of Justice. And I think the Amazon acquisition of MGM is at FTC, and I think the FTC chairman, didn't she write her doctoral thesis on breaking up Amazon? So, and maybe for that reason, it's not there. Maybe it's, I don't know where it is. Maybe it's DOJ. But if that isn't allowed to take place, and I think it should, if that isn't allowed to take place, that would put a question mark around all this. But again, Sony, CBS, Lionsgate, MGM, all of them should be consolidated into the big platform. I don't see them being standalones.
So you see consolidation coming, no surprise there. What do you think of the so-called streaming wars that we're enveloped in right now, from Netflix on down? Did you ever foresee a time where the business would be in a position like this, and how do you think it's going to play out?
Did I ever think that the majority of people in the world would be watching all of their content on their over the internet, whatever device, whether it's the computer or whether it's the TV? I've only started thinking that probably when you started thinking that, which is the last 3 or 4 years, when we realized that, being able to watch shows whenever you wanted them without commercials, all those advantages are just so clear. I didn't think until the incredibly successful launch of Disney Plus that everybody would be doing it, or even that everybody has to do it. So I may have missed that one. I wouldn't have anticipated it happening this fast, and this fast all over the world. It's not just that these guys are cutting into the traditional networks, ABC, CBS, NBC's audience, even though those players are off streaming. It's happening everywhere. Every one of the TV network stocks in the world, whether it's ITV in UK or Telecinco in Spain or anywhere in the world, every traditional television, satellite, cable, everyone else's stocks just hurt by 50%. So it's happened fast everywhere where streaming has taken over. As far as what it would look like, I could not have anticipated the amount of new content. I could not have anticipated that we'd have a scenario now where Netflix is spending $16 billion alone every year on content. That's more than all four networks combined, plus HBO and Showtime 5 years ago. And on top of that, Disney's spending, 10 or 12 billion, and Amazon spending 10 billion, and Apple Plus. I mean, I never could have anticipated that, spending on production would go from 15 billion to 50 or 60 billion in the last several years.
So you're well into this second career now in SPAC land, and I'm curious how you got here and what you learned in your Hollywood days that sort of led the way to where you are now.
Well, look, I always liked public companies. My so-called Hollywood days, I mean, the first company that we created and took public was New World Entertainment, 1985, before most of these students were born. That was a successful public stock. And we sold it in 1989 to Ron Perlman. The next one, SBS Broadcasting, was TV stations outside the U.S. Took that public, sold it to KKR and Premiera in 2005. And then I ran MGM, and I was working for private equity. And I can't blame it all on private equity, but the company was so leveraged that when 2008 came around during the financial crisis, you know, it had to be restructured. It was a failure. And I didn't really like working for private equity. I did much better, and I enjoyed it much more working at public companies. And so after MGM, it's now 2010. I'm no longer, I think I was still chairman until the beginning of 11 or maybe beginning, I forgot when it was. But when I got through with that, I looked back at my career and said I'd had two public companies that were extremely successful. I'd been in a private equity company that, you know, was really hard for me to accomplish what I wanted. If I'd stayed there, would I have sold it for $8 billion to Amazon? I don't know, but it got restructured at like 1.5. So to me, you know, I wasn't able to do what I would have liked to have done there. So then I hear about SPACs in 2010. I'm told you could raise money on your good looks or on your track record and buy a company. And I wanted to run another company. I want to be involved in management of another company. What were my options? I could dust off my resume and go to boards and, you know, try and apply for a job. That's not very attractive. I could try and buy a company, but the size company that I could afford to buy didn't meet my appetite of the kind of company I wanted to run after MGM and SBS and New World and all that. And then I heard about these SPACs that you could raise, right, a bunch of cash and use that, leverage it up. You could raise two, three, we raised 200 on our first one, buy a $1 billion company, and even wouldn't necessarily run it, but could have control over it. Anyway, that's what attracted me to it. It was looked to me to be the best options. And I like public markets. I like public markets because if investors don't like what you're doing, they sell your stock and they go away. In private equity, if they don't like what you're doing, they sell the company right out from under you or they fire you. I just don't think it's a management-friendly model. I think it's a fair weather model. I think when things are going well, they're out looking to sell the company. When things aren't looking well, they're firing the management and looking to dump the company. So I just, you know, public, just much, much more attractive to me to control public companies where I think you get a fairer shake from relatively docile institutional investors.
Got it. 1 year from now, I'm curious if we're talking again, do you expect to add X number of new SPAC deals to the marketplace, or you're just tending to the seven you've got going? Give us a preview.
As far as tending the seven I have going, you know, some of them have been acquired. At the moment, there's only it's the ones that are going. At DraftKings, I'm vice chairman, lead director. Skills, I'm the director. Ginkgo, I'm the director. So there's only three that I have an ongoing role with. The others have either been merged into another company, or they've been sold, or something happened different with the company. I think personally, a year from now, I'm too old to be, you know, out doing a job as a chairman or a CEO. And when we rang the bell 2 weeks ago with Ginkgo, that was the first time in 37 years that I wasn't chairman or CEO of a public company. So I think it's going to be boards. I think it's going to be putting deals together. But I think I've seen my last chairman and CEO. The last SPAC, which I was chairman and CEO, is probably the last one where I'm going to be, you know, that active.
This has been another episode of Strictly Business. Tune in next week for another helping of scintillating conversation with media movers and shakers. And please make sure you subscribe to the podcast to hear future episodes. Also, leave a review in Apple Podcasts and let us know how we're doing.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the back seat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.